Committee meeting to order. Brenda, would you lead us in the pledge?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can I ask for approval of the October 7th meeting minutes? All in favor? Opposed? Carried. Patty, good morning.
Your microphones.
Good point.
Yeah, hold it down until it turns green.
It's fogging up because it's got its mask on.
Pressing it hard enough.
Yeah.
Just lost the meeting? Please, something.
There you go.
It's good now.
I have the finger in the right place, huh?
There we go. Thank you. Good to go down here.
Patty?
Everybody?
Morning.
Patty?
My first item is I need to make a recommendation.
Your microphone on. Just push on that button. There you go.
The green light means
Scott.
No.
Scott is the microphone place today.
AB, yeah. I pushed the film recorder around.
Okay, so I am making a recommendation for the bid that we put out for personal emergency response system. As you know, we currently have Doyle Securities up in Rochester, and we had to put it out for bid because St. James assigned their contract over to Doyle mid-year, and they're not going to be doing PERS anymore. So we put it out for bid, and we had four applications. I'm recommending Life Station, which is out of New Jersey. They came in at $13.50 a month as opposed to the $19 a month that we are currently paying. We currently pay $29 a month if the client has fall detection. For Life Station, if they're going to have fall detection, it's going to be an extra $5 a month. So it still comes in under what we're paying. We interviewed the new proposed contractor, and they met all our requirements in terms of timely installations, communication on a regular basis, and we're hoping for a smooth transition with your approval for January 1st, 2021.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Wait, I have a question.
I'm sorry.
How many people currently use the Doyle that you have to swap out?
58. Okay. Mm-hmm. The Life Station told us that they have pretty much unlimited capacity for us to grow. We expect that number of clients will go up because of the lower rate. We'll be able to serve more people.
Okay. So will you let the clients know? Who's going to let the clients know?
If the clients got a letter from Life Station, they would probably throw it out thinking it's junk mail. So we've done this before. We always send our letter first explaining it, and then the Life Station will send their own letter with the explanation. We were really satisfied with the plan for a transition. I think it'll hopefully go smoothly. And Allegheny County does use Life Station right now. So I did talk to them about their satisfaction, and feel pretty confident that the transition will go smoother because they've done it with Allegheny County.
Any other questions? We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Okay. My next item is we were notified that we are going to be awarded the BEC grant again from the National Council on Aging, and this is for application assistance for core benefits. We're getting $60,000, which started October 1st of this year and will run through September of next year. We didn't know we were getting it, so we'd like to put it all into the 2021 budget. there's a 15% match required, and we already have that figured in to our 2021 budget. We plan to use the funds really to cover salary and fringe and a little bit for a mandatory training that they require.
So moved.
I'll second.
So I have a question, though. It says the funds are to assist Medicare beneficiaries.
Right.
With applications. So that's the administrative part you're talking about?
Right. We do application assistance already. There is a piece of the BEC project that requires us to reach out to partners throughout the county that do similar things, like Catholic Charities helps with, you know, SNAP applications. So we don't duplicate effort. It's a coordinated process for making sure that we serve the maximum number of clients and do case finding.
Did you apply for it?
We did. We were notified that we were funded before we even submitted the application. So they were really happy with the first 20 months that we did. They set a goal for us of 500 applications, and we did 1,000 in the first funding cycle. So they were anxious to refund this, although when we were first notified of this funding opportunity, we were told it was a one-shot deal. So we were really pleased when they reached out to us and said, we want you to apply.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Morning, Bill.
Good morning, Bill. First, thank you for tolerating us playing around over here, trying to figure out. We're hoping to Zoom the administrative meeting for the youth next week. And this is the trial run. I've got Jim Gallagher sitting in his living room spying on what we're doing. So first time in a long time, actually, the youth development program funds from the state that we get from OCFS each year. I always have to say these are for programs that started on January 1st. The state has just notified how much funds we are going to get for the county, in which case we can turn around and make our allocations to those agencies, largely youth centers and other services for youth. And I will start with, in the past, they have always... No, I'm not going to. That's too long. too long story. Last year, we received $86,546. This year, we have been authorized for $78,101. There is a chance we could get some additional funds. It was in the approved budget that the youth system would get the additional funds. But this, so far, this is all they have approved to be sent out. And so this is what we're working with. If we get more, we'll figure out what to do with those when they come. The other thing that's kind of the backdrop of this, of course, is the state withholding 20% of any voucher that we send to them, which kind of puts the county in a middle situation. And I'll start with the very first contract that you see, Catholic Charities of Steuben, from Bath Area Hope for Youth. I'm recommending $7,035. If I give them that much money, if we pay them $7,000 and then apply to the state for $7,000, the state is not going to give us the $7,000. They're only going to give us $6,300, something like that. Somebody can do the math, minus 20%. I was trying to find a way that the county basically would not be paying the 20% to the counties. If the agencies take off 20% before they send us the bill, and we turn around and ask for that voucher, the state is going to take another 20% because we are the contract for the state. So they're going to take 20% of what we send them for a bill, for an invoice. So we had to try to find a way for the county not to pay the 20% to this programs that were being offered. And basically, in a long story short, I did that by trying to put as much as possible under administration. We always keep a portion of the YDP funds for admin for the Youth Bureau, largely my salary. And so we tried to bump that up as much as possible. I will say the allocations that you are seeing, for the most part, you can see a lot of 20% reductions. So Beth, I'm going to actually go to a different one. So Hornell Area Concern for Youth, three different programs that are listed there. In the allocations that we are recommending, you can see that is actually 20% less than what they receive. So yes, the agencies are generally receiving a 20% reduction in our plan. So they will, the recommended funding for that $19,002 for Hornell Concern, that is what they will voucher to us. That's what we would pay to Hornell Concern. We would turn around and voucher that same amount to the state. The state will turn around and pay 80% of it. when you do that, as I said, the county is losing out that 20%. There were programs that were a couple of exceptions to that. I will say there were programs that just a lot of the summer rec programs did not operate this year. And you can see that under John Southard. The numbers are lumped together, but that did not apply for that JSYRC for Catholic Charities. Under Family Service Society, they had two programs. They had the youth services, a counseling program, and they also had Corning Area Youth Center. They themselves chose not to apply for the services simply because they would prefer to roll those same funds into the youth center to support the center itself. When you add those in together, then it actually is a reduction of 32%. It's not you didn't want to use it here. It's not the agency's choice, I guess, is what I'm saying, that they didn't want, instead of using the program here, they wanted to use it over there. We ended up reducing that total amount that they received 32%. The ProAction last year did run our summer rec programs. They're the fiscal agency for our summer rec programs for the majority of them. There were 10 of them. Only three of those programs ran this year, and we are actually moving that contract to the Steven Youth Services Fund, which is a nonprofit that we started about a year and a half ago. I'm the administrator for that. Full disclosure, Jack is on the board of that. The big difference is that ProAction charged their admin, which is about 9%, 10%, somewhere in that neighborhood. And the Youth Services Fund, we are not charging the admin. So we're actually saving funds out of those. And we're also out of those 10 programs that operated last year, only three of them operated this year. So we have some savings there as well. And you can see Town of Campbell, for example, did not apply just for this year. They just did not have a program. So at the end of that section, the $47,000 is what we would pay out to the agencies and what we would bill to the state. The state would turn around and pay us $37,629 if they'd keep with the 80%. Down in the next section, which is the Youth Bureau Services or the admin, I will say also that we combined we also had a leadership initiatives in the past. We just have not been able to do the summit this year, and it was just easier to roll it into the youth and government. And we took a 20% reduction on those programs. But I did increase the admin quite a bit to try to make up for all of the funds that we were paying to the state or to the agencies, but not getting reimbursed by the state. So, yes, our funding is 78,101, but in actuality, it's going to be 62,480 that we expect back from the state. This was a lot clearer in my head when I was planning for this before I was monkeying with this stuff over here in the corner. So any questions, anything, I would certainly welcome.
I do have a question.
Yep.
In the past, it seems like the summer youth programs have been very beneficial to towns. And they didn't apply this year. Is that what you're saying?
Solely because of COVID.
COVID.
Yeah. I think everyone that did, all of them that did not apply, just simply said, we can't do it, or we're not doing it, whether it was a cost savings or they were worried about safety or what. I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
I'm fully confident that all of those programs will come back on next year if we can.
And if I could just pipe real quick. I'm getting feedback echo. That's okay. I'll try to ignore it. What we ended up having over the years, back 10 years ago, those youth programs, the summer rec programs, used to get, you know, $1,000 or more. We've had a number drop off over the years because there's paperwork that they have to complete, and some are getting, you know, $150, $200. And they just kind of decided it wasn't worth their time to complete that paperwork.
And actually, in the last year or two, we've added Urbana back in. They stopped taking that funding a few years ago, but chose to last year. And Lindley has a small, very short program. So they were new last year as well.
So, Bill, I'm all in favor of the Corning Youth Center getting some more money or continuing to get money. But I'm a little worried about the youth services counseling. Will there be, other than mental health, is there any other services that will be provided to our youth for counseling? Since I keep hearing this is a huge issue now.
Yes, this was largely primarily for alcohol substance abuse prevention. I'm fully confident that family services will continue to provide those services. It's a key part of their organization. However, sort of because of the way that OCFS set up the performance measures for those programs, it was getting more and more difficult for them to have enough kids and to, you know, when you've got to keep track of a kid and ask them 6 months later, are you using yes or no? It became more and more difficult. And I think that they saw the need for the youth program. They were trying to expand the youth center to create a second floor for older youth. And so I think they themselves chose to have those funds allocated there. I will say that sort of the thing I'm really excited about, and it's, we do still have ProAction there listed. And that is because they have started a Bath Youth Development Program. We have been working for years trying to create a youth center in Bath. This is not a center yet, but they are providing after school. ProAction got funds, as I understand it, felt that they got funds through the COVID funding that they were able to create the virtual learning center for youth in Bath, which means on those days that the kids don't go to school, they can go to this location. It's a very small program right now, but it's seen and is hopefully a first step to creating a youth center.
We had one of our youth in government students asking for a youth center in Bath.
We have over the last at least 10 years, I would say we probably had a dozen youth centers our students asked for. Maybe not quite that many, but probably at least half dozen.
Dan, you had a question?
Yeah. So most of these grants or fund applications, they only allow for a certain percentage for administration. Apparently this one allows that much flexibility.
This is falls under the we're going to try it and see what happens. And I don't mean to have my back to you, but I want to stay with the microphone. Yeah. They do allow some flexibility. I think this is going to make them uncomfortable at the state, but I'm hoping that it will go through. If not, we'll have to come back and adjust, but I'm going to ask them to tell me no.
Do we have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any other questions? So moved.
Thank you so much.
Morning. Morning, Lee.
Take off my mask so you guys can understand me. I'm here for two items. We need to approve the heat furnace bids. We received a response back from Blevins and ID Booth, and as in previous years, we just go with a lowest bid for each item. If there ends up being anything that we would need that would not have been on our bid, then we have to get three quotes, and we get that with assistance of purchasing. So that was the first item.
And so
who
was the bid awarded to? I'm sorry.
It's Blevins and ID Booth, the two responders. And so what we generally do is they don't both respond to every item. And if they do, we just choose the lower of.
I'm sorry.
So no, that's okay. So I think I went fast. ID Booth, they're in the first 90 plus house furnace, and then there's some crisscross. So it really just depends on who's lower, you know, whether it's been awarded to Blevins or ID Booth.
Okay, thank you.
I'll move it. I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any other questions? So moved.
The second item is the county has received some additional DSRIP funding. And just as we had done with the last DSRIP funding that had come through, we were asking to put that into the capital project that's been created, the DSRIP project. And we're looking to support the homeless safety net population in Steuben County. And the amount that was awarded was $242,862.
I'll move that. Second.
Any questions?
Are we getting an idea of the homeless population? Is it expanding by a lot? Is it staying the same?
It was very expanded during COVID. Our costs were horrendous. It lowered during the summer months, but not to what it had been in previous years. Our numbers are starting to look up again. And of course, now we're looking into code blue weather. And so expected that to increase as well. So doing our best to try to have people housed. And I'm hoping that it doesn't go back up to the numbers that we saw. We were looking at 150 a night that were housed.
Where did you put them? 150 people.
Everything.
Granted, there's a lot of hotels that needed the time and the space. But
everywhere we could.
Wow.
And that included families. And we're about half of that right now. About half that number in, but we are working diligently trying to get some housed, and we did get some funding to assist with that again, like the previous step, which I know we talked about in one of our.
We have a lot, we have several people that come to the Corny Pantry that are walking from the hotels, the motels in the area in the East Corny.
And we coordinated with Catholic Charities, and they assisted, especially during COVID, to help us get food bags and connection to food bank, to pantry services for those individuals who are placed at the hotel, especially during COVID when we didn't want people out and about and we were trying to limit the amount of exposure. So they assisted us with that too, through their emergency services program.
Because they tell us they can't cook. They can only have a microwave. So we have to be careful of what we pack for them.
Yes. Yes, it's microwave. It wasn't on the agenda. I just wanted to mention, I know that the chairman is going to do a proclamation this month. It is National Adoption Month. We have 31 freed for adoption. We've had 7 year-to-date adoptions. We're looking at 3 for the month of November. Of course, they've almost all been remote, and that'll continue in that for right now. That's it. Any questions?
On the homelessness, what about the age groups of people who are homeless?
We don't have it broken out by age group.
We talked before about the youth.
The number of youth that are in there. We do have, I think right now we have just 2 families, I believe. I'd have to look at my number to check that for the number, but we coordinate and we count that with Lisa Baker assists us in tracking those and reporting them to Bill as well, so we can keep track of those youth. But generally when we have those youth, we also work very closely with our services side as well to make sure everybody's connected and getting to where they need to get.
Thank you.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any other questions? So moved.
Thank you.
Good morning, Nate.
Okay. Lynn, do you want Lynn?
Yeah, Lynn.
Okay. I just have one item this morning. We're going to modify it a little bit from what it shows on the agenda. We've done some back and forth and really planning with this position. And instead of being a transfer and reclassification, we're looking to just do a reclassification. So what we're looking to do is take a vacant staff psychologist in community services and reclassify it to a social services clinical coordinator. Is a little lower grade than the staff psychologist was. I'll let Lise and Lynn actually explain a little bit more in depth than what I can.
The position has been integral to our department. They've very much assisted with our cross systems, our assessments, coordinating, working with the hospitals, hospitalizations, very broad. And we had a staff psychologist in that position as that was available, and it's worked very well for us. Community services is in need of a staff psychologist, and they are very short in number, and he is returning to community services. So we've thought that the best idea in order to keep that position filled and moving forward is to lower it, reduce the classification.
Well, and this title is a new title that we actually now made specifically for this item, where before they were using the staff psychologist to do this. This one is actually tailored specifically to the duties that this position needs to do.
And the idea with community services as well is, just as our KSEX and other positions, there's supervision that is required and beneficial to those right. positions as well. And so obviously we need that under community services. So it enables better communication and access.
Right, this reclassification broadens it so it's open to master's level social works or psychologists instead of just the doctor level. So there'll be a larger pool of candidates available. We've had a very hard time filling empty therapy slots, certainly psychology slots. So this will make it more amenable to find somebody with knowledge of the systems. And those people oftentimes need supervision for their licensing and credentialing, which would come from people with experience usually more than they have, or a certain licensure, which we have in our department to provide that supervision.
We moved it. Second. So I have a question. So I'm confused are we still having a psychologist coming back to community services and then this position? Okay. That is only going to be, it will not be part of community services.
This position will be part of community services. We contract with them. And okay. When we contract with them, we also pay, we're able to draw down administrative dollars on the position in addition. So we're able to pull and claim that, but we contract with community services for the position, and then we can pay some supervision and oversight and administration on it.
And just in addition, obviously there's enough flex in the budget this year because of how few vacant positions that we filled during the year. And also this was accounted for in your draft budget for 2021.
Any other questions? We have a motion.
Did you move it? We did in a second.
Second, okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you.
Thank you again.
First comment. Next, we have public health. Darlene, are you on?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. I just have one quick item, looking for approval for a new contract for preschool related services and occupational therapist, Cynthia Vollmer, and same rates as all the other ones, $70 for session, 35 for individual session, 35 for group.
I'll move it. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any other questions? So moved. Next we have Jack. Do you have anything, or Chris?
Nothing on my end.
Okay. We have one other thing under other business. We were presented with a petition regarding soccer, the soccer league. And the point is they are opposed to making the soccer players wear masks. And under the state guidelines, that's not required, but under our local guidelines, it is required. So, Darlene, would you like to expand on that?
Yeah, both Darlene and I can, because we've both been involved in those discussions. So under the state guidelines, it's unclear. Both the New York State Department of Health and NISPA, which is the Public Schools Athletic Association, says for close contact sports like soccer, face covering should be worn if 6 feet can't be maintained unless a player cannot tolerate it. Now, how tolerated is defined is the part that's essentially the confusing part, and what leads to this issue. We got involved in this. So obviously every week, and I think we've shared it with you, we have a weekly call with superintendents, and we have since before the school year started, and last school year as well. Our schools, Darlene originally didn't take a formal written position on this issue. Because the schools, during the course of our calls, universally agreed together based on advice of their medical directors, their attorneys, and insurance carriers, is what they explained to us, is that face coverings should be worn in soccer. All other sports really aren't an issue. It's really that are active right now. It's really just soccer where it becomes complicated. So our schools were 100% that both teams have to wear face coverings for soccer. That became, some schools took the stance that they wouldn't even play out of county schools if they came down and weren't wearing face coverings. Where public health ended up getting involved and where the county ended up getting involved is with Section 5. There's a fight between Section 5 because of that whole who can tolerate. Livingston and us, our counties, the schools collectively in our two counties have agreed to wear face coverings for soccer. It seems like in Monroe and Wayne is where that's gotten a little less straightforward. Some do, some don't. Section 5 came down and said they had calls with Darlene and I when we've been out here, and put our schools in a position where they said, well, public health never wrote a recommendation formally about face coverings for soccer. So we, Section 5, are going to tell the schools what they're going to do. Our schools were very, very uncomfortable with that. And so they requested Darlene write that recommendation to formalize it. So this is really in support of schools, is where that came from. And to change that, number one, would be at the discretion of the public health director, really, in terms of a health recommendation. And number two would put our schools in a really bad spot where they may have to forfeit games if they chose not to or if they chose not to play teams that weren't wearing face coverings.
I mean, that's a really good summary of how this transpired. And just as to expand a little bit, another rationale or motivation reason that the schools really wanted this, which I happen to agree with, is it just really doesn't seem to make any sense that kids for gym classes, PE, need to wear masks, but not during soccer. So it just, to me, the rationale is the same. And before this was put into place, we had a student playing soccer, played an out-of-county team. That student ended up being positive. No one was wearing masks, so we quarantined both teams. And it's, if they're wearing masks, then they would not, the whole team would not need to be quarantined. So it really would lessen that impact, which is significant, because I mean we still have over 700 individuals in isolation and quarantine, in this county. So just all of those things together, it really
joined the meeting
made sense to proceed this way.
Where's this petition from?
It doesn't have a, what's it, Kelly?
Sorry.
This has to Bend County Athletics.
Yes, yes, it's a petition from a constituent in my district who has a son who plays on the soccer team. He had concerns, and my concern and my desire to present it to the committee is so that we have an understanding on which policies actually are handed down to us from the state and which policies are ones that we are directing and how we base those decisions. So my thought in presenting it to the group was simply for that, so that we have an understanding and then can present that to our constituents.
Are there any kind? Oh, Jen, I'm sorry.
How many signatures are on that petition here?
I was trying to count them up, but because I just got this morning. So probably 30, 35. Perhaps up to 40. I didn't count them all.
Right. But I still felt, no matter the amount of leverage, that it was important for me to deliver the petition to the group and get to listen to Darlene's explanation as to how we came to this conclusion, which seems to make a lot of sense. Is there a differentiation between physical activities that are inside, like gym, versus soccer, which is an outside activity? Is there less risk in your mind or no?
Well, anything outside is you know, thought to be less of a risk than indoors because of, you know, the obvious, you know, wide open ventilation, so to speak. But still, you know, the close proximity, I understand with soccer, it's generally, you know, shortened time periods of you know, being right next to players battling for the ball right next to each other. But the amount of, you know, exhaling and droplets, it's just, it's a concern. So even though they're outside, it was still advised that masks should be worn during play.
And we spoke obviously with the schools as mentioned, but one of the physicians in our area is medical director for a few of our schools and former soccer player himself. And he was pretty adamant in his recommendation to the schools to require face coverings for soccer, which I think is why, you know, they ended up where they ended up.
And Kelly, if you go to Department of Health website, there are guidelines. They have every sport categorized. They did that over the summer. So they have them broken down by low risk, mid risk, high risk, every sport you can think of. So that's kind of step one of how they came to this, is the state classified them and then it filtered down to the schools from there.
And, sure. And I'm not saying that the policy itself is not a good idea. I just felt that because I was questioned on where it came from and the constituent wanted it to be considered to be reversed, I think it's important for us to have this conversation.
No, I agree. I'm not sure that a lot of people, I'm just putting out there, I'm not sure that a lot of people that read these minutes or, you know, hear where this comes from, is that it is on DOH website. It's Excellent. Something, it's very lengthy.
And what, again, one of what makes it complicated, the way that DOH wrote the guidelines and NISFA, the Public Schools Athletic Association, is that whole unless they can tolerate. In most other cases, you know, in a school, if a child can't tolerate it, it's not the child that says, I can't tolerate it. They have to get a note from a medical doctor or some other procedure. That's where the guidance could certainly be more clear from the state about what is required. But that's where the confusion lies, because some are interpreting, well, myself as the athlete can determine, or my parents can determine. And that's where the confusion lies and why you don't see every county across the state handling it this, you know, the exact same way.
So, you know,
I wondered what the metric was to determine if you can't tolerate it. So it's based on a doctor's note.
Well, in most cases, anytime, correct me if I'm wrong, but really any other time you see that in state guidance, it requires a medical opinion. In soccer, it does not explicitly state that in this guidance. So some schools are taking it to say that the athlete themselves can determine.
Jack is absolutely right. And conversely, you know, because all of the other guidance specifically said, you know, if you can't medically tolerate, we just, you know, transferred that we, the global, the schools, the attorneys, medical directors, myself, Jack, we just, you know, kind of transferred that to apply to soccer as well. So, you know, a student parent would still have that option to, even though, you know, this is in place where the teams, Steuben County teams need to wear a mask during soccer, a parent would still have that option of, if the student really couldn't tolerate the mask, of, you know, taking them to their, primary care physician and attempting to get a medical exemption for that mask.
I just have one other question. On this case where you had to quarantine the two soccer teams, did we get any other positives out of that that you're aware of?
No.
Okay. No. The other, one of the teams was from Ontario County, so we wouldn't necessarily know that, but not in our county.
Okay. Thank you for having the conversation.
Yeah, and just to clarify, our schools were universal. The one team that didn't, Bradford plays with Dundee, and Bradford School is technically not in our county. They are in the Finger Lakes League instead of the Steuben County or the Livingston County League, where all the teams are wearing masks. So that's why Bradford joins our, because part of their district is in our county, they join our calls. But that was the one that we were talking about. And in that case, that student was a Steuben County resident, which is why we got involved in that.
Darlene, on that situation where the two teams were quarantined, did I understand you to say if they'd worn masks, they wouldn't have been quarantined?
Most likely not. Right. Correct. That's you know, the whole point.
So it's, well, I know it is, but I'm saying, you're defining and saying if you wear a mask and there's in somebody tests positive, there's no quarantine. If you don't wear a mask and somebody tests positive, there is quarantine. That's what the decision's based on.
Right.
Based on a mask or no mask.
Right. Because with soccer, the time to get, you know, the close proximity to the of the players is brief. And so having that mask while playing, it for all practical purposes, unless there's some other circumstance related to it, should prevent quarantine.
I think what we have to remember here is whether or not we sympathize with the mask, if it works or not, we're still under the restraints of the state legislature. And, you know, whether or not we decide these things are going to keep our businesses and our schools open.
Speaking of which, Darlene, can you give us an update? Because when I looked yesterday, I think it was yesterday or last night, on the website, the data was about, I think, October 30th. Can we get an update? And also a couple other things. Someone asked me from City Council what we have to do to get that percent positive down to under 1%. I mean, number of people that need to go under to get cleared. And the other is City Council would like a number. The number is broken down for Corning versus the county, if that's possible.
Yeah. So first, let me give you the numbers. I believe it is updated now. We just checked while you were talking. It does look like it's updated on the website now. Not sure what the delay was, but we currently have, as I mentioned just a bit ago, 757 in isolation and quarantine. We have 13 in the hospital with 81 deaths. So that's a good segue to the positivity rate, which over the last reported 7-day rolling average is at 4.7%. What will get us down? It is our understanding to get out of the yellow zone, we need to have a positivity rate of just under 2%.
Just in that yellow zone area.
Right. Yeah. Right. Just in the yellow zone area. So what we feel will the best method to get us to get that percent reduced, honestly, is through testing. Just as much testing as possible, because, you know, the more obviously most likely you are going to have some positives that come out of a large testing initiative, but you're also going to have a whole bunch of negatives. So that is what will help to reduce that percent positive number. And we are working towards that. You know, we've got this, we've supplied the schools in the yellow zone have to do 20% every week of testing. We've supplied them with Binax cards, which are a rapid test, and the school nurses are administering that. And we are, we oversee and facilitate the data from that and upload it into eClairs and manage that piece of it, as well as the distribution of the Binax test kits to them on a weekly basis. We do have the Abbott Rapid ID Now machines, and we are going to be looking at, soon, hopefully, another community wide testing site for that, that is dependent, however, on help and support from State Department of Health is in terms of them sending down contract nurses. So we can make all the plans in the world around a community testing site, but I do need their support and help, or I can't make it happen, quite honestly. So the updated on the website, it was last updated on the 3rd, which was yesterday. So we've had so far 1,195 confirmed cases and 167 active.
I'm gonna check the map while we're talking.
And you might also notice on that graphic on the website, you might notice a fairly new category where it says number of deemed positive. And we only have one listed there so far, just in case you're wondering about that. That is completely related to school. The guidance is that if a student is excluded from school due to a COVID symptom, and as you know, those COVID symptoms are pretty broad, can apply to a lot of different illnesses, but if they are excluded from school for even just one COVID symptom, if their parent does not get them to their doctor to get an alternative diagnosis or a COVID test with a negative result within 48 hours, I have to deem them positive. They may not be, but that's beside the point. I have to deem them positive. So we felt like we should make that a separate category on that graphic, because in fact, they may not be positive, but they, in relation to school only, they would have to be considered positive. So we've made that kind of a new category.
And Darlene, to that point, it goes back to Paul's point about living with the rules that are given to us from New York State. That's why we wanted to make it clear to the constituents, we're not, we're very clearly showing that this is the separate category. The other thing that I think will help with that, because Darlene has had to deal with many calls from school districts on these issues, but the Binax cards, the rapid tests are much less invasive. I know some parents, and even as a parent, I don't want my kids to repeatedly have to have the PCR tests. I mean, that would not be a pleasant experience, and they do it about once and then I'd have to drag them in to have it done again. These Binax rapid tests are a nasal swab instead of a PCR test. So it only goes approximately an inch into your nostril. So it's much less invasive and it's obviously more readily available. The state has been supplying us with those. So that is another area where, we can work with the parents if they don't want to do that. And we can work with the schools to try to avoid that issue.
And Did you get
a numbers broken down, say, for Corning?
So if you look at Hilda on the map, so we have a GIS map. The link to it is in the middle of our main county page. You can click on each individual municipality. Now, it doesn't show how many active cases per municipality. It shows how many total, but you could click on the city of Corning and see how many total cases there have been.
I did get that request from Dr. Enders yesterday, asking to kind of, further mine our data in relation to the city of Corning. Laura Lee is kind of she is the keeper, the guru of all of our data, with a very massive spreadsheet. What they are asking would be incredibly labor intensive, to be honest. I mean, it was my intention to try to reach out to Dr. Enders today to get maybe further clarification and to see if we can assist in a different way. It would take a lot of time investment to produce what they are asking for.
Okay. Any other questions?
I wanted to get back to this petition issue. As they've explained, and it's my opinion, this thing evolved by having a number of school districts in the county, basically all of them, decide on their own for their own students that they needed to wear masks. The only reason that the county got involved by issuing a recommendation was because of Section 5 issue coming in to our county from out of the county. My question to Jack and Jen would be, and I have no interest in taking this petition any farther than this committee, but if the legislature decided that we should not be wearing masks when we play soccer, can we tell school districts that? Because isn't it their own students and their own games and their own districts that make that decision? How could it be our decision to tell them they don't have to wear masks?
It really wouldn't be. The guidance from DOH says that the commissioner of State Department of Health makes the decisions and the recommendations. So when it got pushed out to the schools, there was a little section in it that said basically the local commissioner or public health director can issue guidance. So that was more of a situation if there wasn't a consensus. So since there was a consensus, it wasn't issued. So it's a state authority to the local board, Darlene, commissioner, director locally to make that decision if it needed to be made.
Okay.
Any other comments about Aaron?
Thanks. I had a question on when Steuben County teams are wearing masks, but if other teams not wear them, like in the sectional play that'll be coming up, is Steuben going to be just not playing these games, forfeiting them? What's the policy there?
So we don't have a policy, and we've had that discussion with the schools, but that would be a school decision. I know some schools just anecdotally in talking to them are uncomfortable about that for that reason, but it would be an individual school decision about whether they play or not and how that looks.
Thank you. That's what I was wondering about.
Any other comments? I would just say I feel that we need to support our public health director in the decisions she made directing the soccer teams to wear masks. And I think there are options for children that can't tolerate a mask. But my opinion is that we stand and support this recommendation from Darlene.
As a mother of three former soccer players, I would have definitely gone along with the Department of Health because I'd rather have my kids be safe. And if there's a problem with their breathing and we take them to the doctors, then it's a different story. But I would have definitely have gone along with the masks.
Any other comments? I would like to say that we will accept this petition and have considered it and stand by the public health director's memo. Any other comments? Any other business? We have a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. This needs to go back. Or should it go?